అథ పరం
ప్రవక్ష్యామి
వంశన్ మన్వంతరాణి చ ఏవం రాజా పృథశ్రష్టా ఔపాదిష్వాత్మభూర్హరి సృజత్యమోగ సంకల్పా ఆత్మైవాత్మానమాత్మనా. Atar, here, param, after, pravakshyami, I shall explain, vamsan, descendants, manvantarani, different advents of manus, cha, and, evam, thus, Raja Pluta, confused with the mode of passion. Shrashta, the creator. Kalpa Adishu, in different millenniums. Atmabhu, self-advent. Hari, the personality of Godhead. Srijati, creates. Amogha, unfailing. Sankalpa, determination. Atma Eva, he himself. Atmanam, himself. Atmana, by his own energy. O good Vidura, these last three creations and the creation of the demigods, the tenth creation, are Vaikrita creations, which are different from the previously described Prakrita natural creations. The appearance of the Kumaras is both. The creation of the demigods is of eight varieties. 1, the demigods. 2, the forefathers. 3, the Asuras, or demons. 4, the Gandharvas and Apsaras, or angels. 5, the Yakshas and Rakshasas. 6, the Siddhas, Charnas, and Vidyadharas. 7, the Bhutas, Pretas, and Paisachas. 8, the superhuman beings, celestial singers, etc. All are created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. Purport. As explained in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Siddhas are inhabitants of Siddhaloka, where the residents travel in space without vehicles. At their mere will, they can pass from one planet to another without difficulty. Therefore, in the upper planets, the inhabitants are far superior to the inhabitants of this planet in all matters of art, culture, and science, since they possess brains superior to those of human beings. The spirits and jinn mentioned in this connection are also counted among the demigods, because they are able to perform uncommon functions not possible for men. Translation. Now I shall describe the descendants of the Manus, the creator, Brahma, as the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality of Godhead. Okay. Now I shall describe the descendants of the Manus, the creator, Brahma, as the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality of Godhead. Creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. Purport. The cosmic manifestation is an expansion of one of the many energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Creator and the Created are both emanations of the Supreme Truth. As stated in the beginning of Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Divisions of the Creations. So now we've gotten a divisions of the creation. So this is the actual divisions. means modern science has divided them into so many ways, because, you know, you try to find something common, you know, this one has hair, that one doesn't, this one has a nose, that one doesn't, like this. So they've found different ways to put them together, but then the Vedas, they have specific ways to put them together. Why would that be? Because that would be the process how you get out. See, there's two ways to study the universe. Study it in such a way and reorganize all the bodies of knowledge so that by studying it you get out of the material world. The other way is to reorganize it that you ensure that you stay within the material world. These are your options. So the Vedic prefers the first one of getting out. The modern is dedicated to the second of remaining here and rotting in the most sophisticated way possible. Right? So that is the thing. So that when, you know, someone's rotting in the material world, then someone can go, come by them and smell and go, a good year. Yes. Like this. So this is the difference here, the Vedic and the, how do you say it? The modern. That's why the mechanistic understanding of the universe is not actually very important. Metaphysical, yes. Mechanistic, no. You can look at it as a point of interest, the mechanistic, but the mechanistic is how people are keeping themselves here. Well, the metaphysical is the branch, the joint between our physical condition and the spiritual condition. Right? So it's a very different academy. Very, very different. Its whole purpose is to elevate one, not to remain here. But in doing so, it is very, very complete in that the living entity thinks that there is something of substance here in this world. And because of that, then the living entity is distracted from the proper performance of, how you say, elevating activities. So the Vedas then, how you say, absorb those into the process. Right? Those things that will distract you, no matter what it is. Right? There's nothing that the Vedas don't deal with. Whatever is your distraction, it's there in the Vedas. And they give the proper regulations for dealing with it, so that by dealing with it in that way, you can see the difference between matter and spirit. Right? Modern knowledge will teach you how to deal with your desires, but not how to get away from those desires. But because of that, the actual desire cannot be completely fulfilled. Right? Otherwise, you'd only need one book. Right? But there's millions of books out there. In the Vedas, when it comes to Artha, there's one book. Right? Chanakya. When it comes to sense gratification, there's one book. Right? When it comes to Dharma, then you have Manu. Anything else is adjustments of these. Right? Upanishad, you have Ishopanishad. The other Upanishads are expanding on that. So the Vedas, it's very straightforward. You have one very clear thing. This is how it works. Right? But then the problem is if we understand its purpose, right? Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are only for the purpose of developing devotion. But the living entity in the conditioned state will be attached to one or any combinations of these four. That's why you're conditioned. Right? If you weren't attached to them, you wouldn't be conditioned. Right? So, therefore, the Vedas then take those bodies of knowledge, regulate them in such a way, bring out the knowledge, because the knowledge is the key. Right? You have a cycle because of ignorance. Right? We started off in the beginning because of the ignorance. All these things, all other things expand from there. You adjust the ignorance, you get rid of the material, how you say, perception. Right? Because I think I am the Lord, therefore it's material. I think I am the servant, it's not material. Right? That's the definition between spiritual and material. It's connected to Krishna, it's spiritual. It's not connected to Krishna, it's material. That's the only definition. Other definitions, if you apply them, you'll have problems. Right? oh, if it's according to this rule, then it's spiritual. According to that rule, it's not. Or other things. No. If it's connected to Krishna, it's spiritual. It's not connected to Krishna, it's not. Right? That is your basic foundation. That's 11th canto. Right? Real piety is connecting it to Krishna. Even if it's doing everything very nicely, it's not connected to Krishna, it is impious. It will keep you here. So piety means what takes you back to Godhead. Impiety means what keeps you in the material world. This is a definition you need to use. Right? If we define it by, okay, piety, what gets you to the heavenly planets. No, but you're still in the material world. So how is that really pious? Right? It's just, it's moral. Yes, but does it make you Krishna conscious? If it does, great. Then it's spiritual. If it doesn't, it is material. And it's the difference between wet stool and dry stool. It's just stool, right? Or the nice example of a gold chain being bound by a gold chain rather than by a silver and iron chain. But you're still bound, right? But that's the thing nowadays. Oh, hey, check out my gold chain bindings like that. Oh, you only have silver chain bindings, you know. Aren't I special? Like that, you know. So this is the problem, is that our definition of how we act is tainted by ignorance. And because of being tainted by ignorance, therefore the straight, direct, clear spiritual understanding becomes clouded. Right? It's in connection with Krishna, it's good. It's not in connection with Krishna, it's not. Therefore, taking this stand, then the Vedas connect everything to Krishna. Right? And then it's you think about it. Like, okay. Let's start back. Your directions in society, your social, values, generally are coming from philosophy and religion, right? If we think about it like that. Our religion may be hedonism, but whatever it is, that's our philosophy, right? So now if we take it from some, you know, one of these, you know, interesting characters, right? Germany's full of them. I think France has got a lot of them. Like that. What is that? The low guy? Sanskrit means down. Bottom.
Nietzsche,
yeah. Bottom of the barrel guy. Yeah, that guy. So, all these guys, what is your food? You know, how do you eat and sleep, make and defend according to that? What is the rules? There isn't really. Okay, let's take it back. Let's throw in a little religion. Okay, you're a Protestant. What is your music? What is your art? You don't even have it. In fact, it's against your religion. Okay, so do human beings need refinement? Then, how does it address it? It doesn't. In fact, it militates against it. Okay, go back another step. You're a Catholic. Okay, what is Catholic dress? What is food? Okay, Catholic means eat anything. Yes, okay, so that's true to form. But other than that, then? Right? Other than that, what is Catholic dress? What is food? What is the lifestyle? What is the Catholic lifestyle? You don't have one. There isn't one. Right? Maybe if you're a priest, they got something for you. But if you're not, nothing. Come on Sunday, dress a little nicely. Okay, good. Rest of the time? No. Okay, some of them, okay. What is it, Friday you eat fish, you don't eat meat? Okay, good. Okay, go back a step further. We come back to the Jews. Now they got it down to your underwear, right? It means last I heard, fruit of the loom boxers are the bona fide underwear. They take it that extreme. What you eat, when you eat it, how it's prepared, everything like that. They have some form. But they don't necessarily get into the other with the art, the dress, the music. You don't have. Right? Somehow the eating seems to be done well. Right? Muslims also. Very similar. A little bit, they'll get into something. But then when you get back into the Vedic, everything is defined. So how much more of a developed culture is that? One can say the modern, oh no, but you know, it's like this, but is it a culture? What is it? What is modern culture? Define it. Manu defines it. I guarantee you, no one can define it. But Manu defines it. He says, not Vedic. That's it. Modern is not Vedic. Means? So that means that the time when Brahma was talking to the sages on the Dharma Shastra in the beginning of the creation, modern already existed. There were already people who were not following the Vedas. They're modern. Why modern? Modern is what changes. So that's why you call it contemporary, because it's only happening right now. Tomorrow it's not happening, it's something different. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the Vedic is the complete culture that deals with everything in your life. That's why it deals with that. Why does it? Because you as a human being are interested in all that. You have your music, you have your way you like to dress, the way you like to look, the way you like to eat, how you like to eat, how you like to sleep, how you like to mate, how you like to defend. You have those things. Right? If you sit around and you think about all these things. So then, what are you going to do about it? Okay, then you have that, then you have, okay, I chant Hare Krishna. Okay, great. Now, what about all those things? Right? I'm not chanting Hare Krishna. You know, when I'm eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, am I chanting Hare Krishna? Is that what's going on? So therefore the Vedas have all these things in connection to it. How to get yourself out by still engaging these things in the Lord's service. Then it becomes spiritualized. Right? That's not Maya. That's spiritualizing. That's dovetailing. But it has to be done very maturely. Right? Because this platform that we're talking about means the intelligence is working, not just the mouth. Right? If the intelligence isn't working, then, as Prabhupada says, you have a razor, you can get really badly cut if you don't know what you're doing. Right? You don't have a razor, okay, you can sit there, rub your face, you know, you might get, I don't know if you get anything off like that. But I haven't noticed, you know, someone with one half of their face or something. Nothing happened, but you get a razor, it'll give you a nice shave, you'll get badly cut. So that's the thing with the Vedic culture. It will deal with everything that you have a desire about, but you don't deal with it with intelligence, with sincerity to please Krishna, you will get cut. Right? So that warning is there. One, as we said the first, is it's the only way you're going to get something very of substance. Right? How are you else are you going to deal with your material desires, feel they're satisfied, and understand that the satisfaction of the material doesn't compare to the satisfaction of the spiritual, right? I want to check something, right? I bring out two sweets. Hey, which do you think is better? How do I tell? Right? You taste them. Right? And by tasting, you can go, okay, this one's nicer than that one. Right? So therefore, if the material isn't tasted properly in a way that it's comparable, then how do I tell? If I take one sweet, put it in my mouth, and the other one I rub on the top of my head, how do I compare them and say which is better? So therefore, if I'm dealing with spiritual activities, according to the Shastra, but I deal with material activities not according to the Shastra, where is the common ground that I can compare? There isn't. So therefore, how are you going to give them up? How are you going to be free from them? Okay, I can throw them out, but are they gone? If they're gone, great, that's the easiest way. Decide, this is stupid, throw it out, gone, move forward. Right? Like that. But if you haven't done that, and they're still sitting in the closet, then, you know, when the closet door from being packed with that bursts open, what are you going to do when they all come piling out? Other than, you know, start to quote unquote talk reality, being practical Prabhu, and, you know, just being natural, not being artificial, on and on, blah, 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 like this, right? Like that. It's standard, right? You know, it's just like every brahmachari who's, you know, from the tough brahmacharis who, you know, women, we hate them, like that. Every time when they want to get married, they say, you know, I thought, you know, I should be more responsible, you know, take up some responsibility. They all say the same thing. So the same way, these misdirected devotional materialists, they always say the same thing. They always have the same pat, foolish, unintelligent, non-shastric answers. It doesn't matter who they are. All the same. So it's the same foolishness. So here we're being given. Otherwise, why is it we're going through this? Why are we meticulously picking the creation apart? Because it's through this that you got here. Right? You're a human being means you had to go through all those other things. Therefore, it's being picked apart so you can tell, I'm right here, this is how I got here, this is how I get out. Not, this is how I'm here, so this is how I can have a good time. No. How you can get out, but how getting out means I'll have a good time, and then I'll see that that good time really wasn't such a good time, compared to the direct things. A nice kirtan, nice prasad, association of devotees, hearing the philosophy, worshipping the deity, living in the holy dham, doesn't compare to eating, sleeping, mating, defendant. I don't care which book you're looking at. It won't compare. It can't. Like that. Because one's on the eternal platform, one's on the material platform. So that's why then these things are dealt with. So it's a very delicate balance that it's not ignored because it's Maya at the same time I completely do it. Or I recognize that I'm going to do it and I make up my own philosophy, bogus non-Vedic philosophy. Right? But you have both of them. Both parties are engaged in spiritual and material activities. One tries to hide it, the other one, you know, is in your face. Both of them are wrong. Right? Of course, the one in your face is going to have more problem. But the point is, the Vedas recognize you are conditioned, you're in the material world, therefore you have to take care of your material needs. But in doing so, if you don't do it according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and do it properly, you will have problem. Right? You will have problem. Does that make sense? So, the whole idea of this whole creation is to completely establish where it is. This is the real science. Modern nuclear physics, astrophysics, quantum physics, they're trying to figure out this. We already have the answer. Right? God is in His creation. He's not at the same time. Right? Isn't that the speciality of quantum physics? Something can be in two places at once. Right? It's right there. We talk about it every day. We talk quantum physics. Right? This is the origin of it. Why is it there? Why is it in everything then? Because that's the way God is. Everything came from God. It'll function in the same way. Right? So we have the answers. This is the answers. You have to have that faith, that determination. Otherwise, what are you going to get? Without determination, you're not going to get anything. And the problem is you know too much to become a gross, focused materialist. So you might as well check that one off your list, right? You know, it's just, it's not going to work. You know too much. Like that. So therefore, what's your other alternative, right? I mean, of course, we have Arjuna's, you know, the ribbon cloud, you know, united here or there. Yes, okay. But that wasn't recommended by Krishna, right? There's no focus, no goal, no result. Right? Therefore, take this, Bhagavatam. Take it fully. Have that faith that this will take me back to Godhead. Other things are to be seen in relationship to this. Okay, I need a job, I need some knowledge in that job. Get it. Okay, but what's the point? It's not that knowledge, it's the job. Right? And it's not even the job, it's the result of the job. Right? You're doing the job for money. If you get the money without the job, would anyone be working? You want the answer? Go to Mwilambala. There you get your answer. It's called the dole. Like that. You know, America they call it welfare. Like that. You know, so if you can get, you can even get free money and live, no one's going to bother to work. Right? Isn't it? So the point is you have to be focused, you have to do something, you have to get a result. It's only in the performance of an activity that result is gained. So anything you want has to be connected to an activity. And an activity means you have to have focus. Right? The better the focus, the better result. You don't have focus, so that focus is dependent upon faith. You have faith that this is worth working for, then you work. Right? The big materialists, they're successful. They have faith. I will be happy if I become a billionaire. So therefore they work for it. They have faith. Their faith is the deepest. Right? So in the same way, Prabhupada said we should be no less than materialists in our execution of Krishna consciousness. That faith, that determination that this is it, this will take us back to Godhead. Right? That faith we have to have. We have that, it works. Right? So this is not just something we do, okay, it's Bhagavatam class, we're supposed to be here, like that. This is something we're supposed to live. It's supposed to become our life. Right? Lord Chaitanya was the preacher of Bhagavatam. That meant Bhagavatam was his life. Right? Your attachment, what you are attached to, that defines you. Right? You're attached to something, you're defined by that. Right? You're attached to the house, he's an attached to your house, right? He's like that. You're attached to music, oh, he's a musician. You know, you're attached to money, oh, he's a business person, or, you know. Like that. So if you're attached to Krishna, then you're a devotee. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Okay, so any questions? Any comments? Yes?
What makes
the Shastra, I was hoping that one would be missed. I went by it, you know, it's like, went by that. What makes the Shastric approach to sense gratification work better? How do you get sense gratification if you don't know what a sense is? How do you get sense gratification if you don't know how the sense works? Right? You know, it's just like a baby. Baby is sitting there. Babies love to eat, right? They're an anamoy. That means that is their life. It's food, right? They're in ecstasy. They can sit there for hours eating the smallest amount of food, right? You take your spoon, if you're that elevated, but just as an example of one, you know, some place in the unlimited ocean of babies eating food, you stick the spoon in this way, right? You don't do sideways, that's not, because you're here, food's there, you stick it in this way. Then you pick the spoon up like this, which means that what's on the spoon falls off onto your lap. Right? Then when the spoon gets to your mouth, there is still a little bit of flavor on it, right? There's nothing to eat on there, but there's some flavor. You put that in your mouth, nice taste. And because you're in the anamoy, then you go on for hours like that. You know, so the smallest amount of food takes forever to eat, right? Like that. And besides, if it wasn't for that style, what would mothers do, right? You know, so they're, how do you say, giving occupational engagement to the moms, right? So it's an all-around good, they're great, how do you say, great socialists, you know, working for the better of, you know, so many people in society, right? Like that. But now, how much, as far as means, they're, in other words, they think this is great, right? In other words, by their attachment to food, them dealing with food, they are experiencing that I am having a great time. So their experience is that of great. But as far as the senses go, are they actually getting much sense gratification? No, because they can't distinguish. They don't know. They don't even know how to eat properly. Now, an adult who knows more, then they understand that, okay, you put the spoon in more sideways, and then you just have to, you know, in this artificial way, kind of like get it towards your mouth, right? Babies is much more efficient, right? But this is some artificial like that, or if you're more refined and you put it this way. You know, you have to get this wrist action down, you know, like that. So then, you find you get something more out of it, right? So it's not just, you know, a taste, but it's also, you have something on your tongue that you can get energy from, and it goes to the stomach, you know, after, how you say, so, I mean, at least in theory, after chewing it, then it also maintains the body, right? So you're getting so much more, and they appreciate what it looks like, the smell of it, you know, the environment in which it's served, everything like that. So now, if someone knows more about that, they know what is actual food, what's a real menu, times of the day, what you would cook, seasons of the year, you know, according to what's available in you know, what vegetables and fruits are in season, then you do that, it's in the right environment, it's served properly, the atmosphere is nice, like that. How much more is the enjoyment? You understand? Because that's actual enjoyment, that's solid, So the baby is in ecstasy because they only know food, so getting food, then they're happy. But here you have someone who knows a lot more, and they're able to engage all those things. So the eyes are engaged, the nose is engaged, the ears are, everything, all the senses are engaged. Right? And then there's association. A baby is just not association. They're just eating. You're not eating. You know, it's not like, you know, it's me and the food. You're not you and your food. They understand relationship, but it's, you know, me and the food rather than us and the other people. Like that. So then that comes at pranamoy, right? You know, you're not eating, and then it's only at manamoy, then they actually, hey, we have a relationship here, you know. Like that. So in manamoy, that's where all your regulation comes. So then relationships is expanded fully. So all the relationships can happen at once. Does that make sense? So that's, does that make sense? So someone who understands the scriptures, then there's so much more there. But if they make the mistake of thinking getting that more is advancement or spiritual, that's why then they miss the point. That's why I said if it's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. Better someone's not connecting any of this to Krishna, whatever little bit they are, than to have more activities and not connected to Krishna, right? Better two persons are doing the same amount of spiritual activity. One does less material things, one does more. But neither of them connected to Krishna. The one that does less is better situated because less distraction. But that's the problem. Okay, that works if you're simple. But if you're more sophisticated, you have a lot more things happening. So what are you going to do with that? It mounts up. You know, like that. You know, of course, you know, old age and death are pretty good at kind of making you think about these things because you can't do them anymore. So if you have had some good, solid devotional service, that will generally carry you through that. Like that is because you think about it and go, yeah, there's nothing here, I can't do anything for you and all that. But that's, you see, it's done solid service. Solid service. Then you have something to fall back on. Right? Otherwise, if the one's not committed to that service, even if it's just for a moment, but there has to be that full commitment. That's what Brahma, that's what was special about Brahmadev. His full commitment to following the order of Krishna in a submissive attitude, right? Using his intelligence how to best get it done. That was his success. Right? That's defined in the second canto. So that then is there, so even if it's one moment of that, it's enough. But the point is you have to get that moment. And the more moments of that you have, the better. Right? If you have a whole lifetime of Krishna consciousness, that's more, you know, more of a security than just a few moments. Though those few moments can save you, but if you have the opportunity to do more, why do less? That's the point. You know, so therefore it's not, this is not a doomsday thing that unless one, no, the point is connect it to Krishna. That's the point. You can connect it, it's successful. However simplistic it is, but it has to be connected. It can't just be words. You know, we don't care about all this. Like that. We care about so many things that are material. Why is it we don't care about it if it's, you know, a rule in devotional service, right? Those we don't care about all the Vedic or spiritual rules. We only care about the material ones. Like that, that's inconsistent. Doesn't make sense. Foolish statement. Is that okay? So, anything else? Yes.
Vedic means connected to Krishna.
Yes.
But you ask him in first canto, he condemns the Vedas.
Where does he condemn the Vedas?
Yeah, he said that they
are. No, let's have a statement here. It's nice to. It's the first time I've ever heard that, seeing that he writes the Vedas.
So that's
his job. So then he would be condemning himself. He's an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, you know, it might be. Narad Muni, you said, yes, you said, yes. Yes. You said Narad Muni.
Yeah.
Okay, now
he chastises.
He chastises for what?
Because he wrote so many things, and that result would be that people become bewildered.
Okay, so why would they become bewildered?
Because he doesn't suggest devotional service.
He doesn't suggest devotional service. Okay. So one is, he is suggesting devotional service, but because of the volume of material knowledge that's given in it, the people will take that as, you know, because, you know, instead, somewhere back around the Egyptian time, about 2,500 years ago, then in your Western culture, then at that time, it used to be, up to then, it was Brahmins and Kshatriyas led the culture. But at that time, there started to become a switch, where the Vaishyas and Shudras started to become more prominent. So for Vaishyas and Shudras, then numbers are important. Volume is important. It means quantity, not quality. Brahmins and Kshatriyas, it's quality, not quantity. Vaishyas and Shudras, it's quantity, not necessarily quality. You know, you have numbers. Oh, so many people think this, right? The Brahmin doesn't go by that. He goes, Shastra says this. Right? Vaishya Shudras say, everybody says this. That's their, you know, me and my friend. Right? Like that. Like that. Definition in the modern terms of everybody is one other person agrees with me. Right? Does that make sense? Ask any lady who will tell you. Okay? You understand? So, therefore, because of the volume, Mahabharata is technically 25,000 verses, because that is how many verses deal with the Pandavas. There's 75,000 verses that are side stories that give the essence of everything in the Vedic literature. Right? So now the problem is most people will see those 75,000. Right? And they will see that I can do something here, but they won't see the restriction. Right? That's why I said here is what the points that I'm making here. You use them properly, you'll get a good shade. Use them improperly, you'll get cut very badly. Right? But I'm only bringing it up simply because many devotees nowadays have more faith in the modern, you know, acharyas. In self, you know, you go into the self-help section. That's the most popular place for devotees to go look for books. Right? Not Bhagavatam, not Gita. Right? So, only because of that, if you're going to try to look for some book to perfect your materialism, why not the Vedas? Because only they know how it works. The guy who wrote the book is just as bewildered as everyone else. He's just very smart and observant. And he's noticed some common pattern in the material phenomena that he's using to advantage. And specifically, he's got you to buy his book. That's the greatest advantage. But other than that, then in his own personal life, he's getting something out of it. You understand? So therefore, the Vedas have all the answers. So now, the point was, is he didn't make Krishna the prominent element and that relationship between Krishna and the devotees. If you read Mahabharata, that's all that's going on there. If you know this. But if you don't know this, which most people don't, they may miss the point. Therefore, we see the purified form, or the, let's say, the Bhagavat form of the Mahabharata is the first canto of Bhagavatam. So he's reformed his self by presenting the Mahabharata as it is, without all the side things. So it's very clear it's just the Lord and his devotees and devotional service. That's what Mahabharata is, but most people won't catch that. It's only after understanding Bhagavatam, then you read Mahabharata, you can see all these things. But the point is he's taking them from the Vedas to Mahabharata as the conclusion. Narada Muni says that's not conclusive enough, therefore you have to take them to Bhagavatam. Then from Bhagavatam they can understand Mahabharata, they can understand the Vedas. Does that make sense? He never said there's a problem with the Vedas. Just like Prabhupada, you know, in the same category, Prabhupada never rejected Varnashram. Not once. He was saying misapplication of Varnashram. Thinking that by following the rules that is perfection. That's being rejected. The Varnashram is not, it's human life. It starts here. Janmadhyasya yataha. You know, we start from the beginning. Is that okay?
There's also an argument that the Vedas are giving so many useless information.
Useless? What useless? Tell me one.
Tell
me one useless thing. I'll tell you a story first. There was an Ayurvedic doctor, very big Ayurvedic doctor, and he ran a school, and he had students. And so at the end of his training, he had two students, leading students. Then he gave each one of them this little hand tool, you know, you dig plants out with. You know, we call it a hoe. Around here they call it a nirani, right? So he sent them out and he says, this mountain here, go out and bring me back any plant that has no medicinal value. And then we can study and discuss it. So they both went out. The first student came back and said, there were so many plants. There were too many, I couldn't bring them. Like that. So therefore, I tried to start to say, I couldn't bring them. So I couldn't, there's just so much. Second student came back, also empty-handed. And then the doctor asked him, so, where are your useless plants? He said, no, every plant has some use. There's nothing that doesn't have some use. So now your question. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. You can't go by... You sit in the West, you know nothing else than middle class or upper middle class America. Don't come to India, never been to India, don't know anything about it, and then make judgment about the Veda. That doesn't work. That's cheating. You want to talk philosophy? Yes, there's six philosophies. There are six that are bona fide. I mean, they're all bona fide as far as Vedas, but all of them except one will keep you in the material world. Right? And in Uttara Mimamsa, which is our line, which is Vyas, it has two divisions. That which will get you out of the material world permanently, that which will get you out temporarily. So therefore, the temporary one is also seen as material. There you can make a discussion. In it, then you have Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, but as we see that Krishna in the Gita is saying that Buddhi Yoga is the combination of karma and jnana. See, Karmakanda is useless because you're trying for a material goal, but the material endeavor, not for a material goal, but to please Krishna, that is the process you use. Right? Jnanakanda, then the knowledge of the jnana, but with the activity of the karma, that's Buddha Yoga. Right? Armchair speculators can never understand this. Right? Because knowledge and activity have to be combined. That's Buddha Yoga. That's the chit potency. You use one or the other, you have a problem. So this is the mistake. What is it is that's not useful? Where are those unlimited examples? They don't exist. Yes.
Sometimes people bring up things like which are not relevant for a particular person maybe, but it's not like it's not relevant for somebody else.
Yeah. No, they'll take a detail that's applicable in a certain situation and then say, see, here it doesn't, but that means they don't know what principle is. See, the modern academy doesn't want you to actually know principles. They'll call them a few formulas, but that's only in mathematics, really. They'll have a few. Psychology has a few. Everyone has a few formulas. But they don't want to actually know what's behind them, because what's behind them is God. Then you get to conclusion. That is the bane of the modern academy. The modern academy cannot have conclusion, because then that means faith. That means subjective. Right? So therefore, they don't believe in these formulas, really. So they'll pick a detail. They know a list of details. You memorize the list of details. the more you can memorize, the better you are at using the science. Right? But the less you know, the less you can do. So you're more expert the more you know. But the Vedic is, know the formula on which it's based. Right? Like in Sanskrit grammar, you have one verse, basically. From memorizing one verse, you know 180 verb charts. That if you went to Western University Sanskrit, you'd have to memorize all 180 charts. The Jiva Goswami gives you one verse. So which is better? Yeah. So if I know the root by which I can generate all the forms, that's not better? Then I actually know what's going on. If I know some recipes, nice. But if I know actually the science of cooking and how the combination of spicing, cooking methods, and the various ingredients of cooking respond, so I can generate my own recipe, who's the better cook? Therefore, the Vedic Academy teaches you that. The modern never can. In fact, it's opposed to it. Something more? Yes? No? You understand? The most foolish thing any devotee can do is try to butt heads with the Vedic Academy. You have to be stupid to do that. Because it is the Academy, and everything else is not. Everything else is the talks of Mayaya Apitigyana. Right? You understand? That's why Prabhupada created the BI. To go out there and destroy the modern academy. Think about it. So what fool would stand up against the Vedic Academy? You have to be stupid. Right? As one devotee PhD would refer to it, he calls the degree piled high and deep. And he's talking about cow dung. Well, actually, bulldog he was talking about. Understand? Just for a click, I have no problem with anybody studying in the modern academy, getting degrees, using it. But to say that the modern academy has substance, that I cannot agree with. But that it may be useful in some way in your service, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But to say that it has any substance, you have to be a fool to say that. You have to be a fool. It means you don't know what the Vedic Academy is. Otherwise, Narad Muni is pretty smart. So is Lord Brahma. Four heads. He's in the Vedic Academy. He's not in the modern academy. You look at all of our acharyas, which they're in. But Prabhupada went, they'll say, oh, Prabhupada went to it. Yeah, and what did Prabhupada establish? Right? He was offered a school in Bombay, full, big school, modern, all accredited, everything. Said, no, what's the use? What's the connection to Krishna? Says, we're not interested. Right? He says, the BI. Right? He established our philosophy. He's trying to establish Brahmins. Right? We're not interested in Vaishya Shudra philosophers. That's not our thing. Manu says, if you follow a bogus philosophy, you'll get the reaction for it. You know, it's natural. You create the philosophy and you speak it to others, you get 100 times the reaction. So now you choose where you want to be situated, which side of the line you want to be on. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. One must remember that it's not just the modern academy can have attitude. Right? The Vedic Academy is the origin of knowledge. You're not going to get more attitude than that. We'll take on anybody. You understand? Because the modern academy has nothing to offer. It's a slaughterhouse. You want your degree? You have to perish What your mentor says, you're going to carry it. You do not pass the test. Your thesis fails. That's the way it is. So you have to think like your mentor, which is nice. It's a Vedic point, is that you should take on the mood of your teacher. But what is that teacher's goal? Right? Therefore, you see the destruction of so many devotees' lives who go into the academy, in the modern academy. Spiritual lives, not material. Material, they do quite well. It's direct, it's science. It's not sentiment. Anyone who says it is doesn't know what they're talking about. Right? The Vedas, in it, it presents the same point from so many different angles that everybody can take part in it. Right? So those angles that are not for you, those are impractical. But that doesn't mean the Veda is impractical. Right? Just like when you buy a tape recorder or something, right? You get this fat book that's written in about 20 different languages. So that you only know one of those languages to read the book, does that mean the other 95% of the book is useless? No, it's just not for you. So anyone who says the Veda is useless because they can't discriminate between what's for you and what's not, and that it's been written for everyone, means they don't know the Vedas. They just don't know what the Vedas are or how they're written. They don't know the methodology used. Right? Writing comes from Vyas. He is the writer. Everyone else is following him. There's no literary technique he does not use. But he does it so pleasantly that you don't even notice. Someone else, it's a little bit more rough, it stands out. You go, oh, this is their technique, or that's Hemingway, or that's this, or that's that. The Vyas is all of that. Everything that you want to know, it's called Veda. Knowledge is Veda. If it works in the material, it's because it is Veda. Does that make sense? If it doesn't work, it's not Veda. So that's why in the modern, some works, that's because it is Veda, and some doesn't because it's not Veda. But they're not smart enough to tell that what works is Veda. Therefore, let me follow the Vedas. Is that okay? Okay, so we should end here. We're late. I hope. Rantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinda ki, Jayatai Gauru Premanandi. Oh, thank you. Thank you.